Hey everybody, it's Sarah Benincasa, and this is another episode of Well, This Isn't Normal. I have a new microphone. I hope you like it. Eventually, I'm going to build some sort of a magic box so that, besides the one I already got, you know what I'm saying? Oh, it's Well, This Isn't Normal after dark. It's actually the middle of the day. My friend Dre and her baby daddy and fiance Damien put together this lovely box thing that I've seen other voiceover artists have, and I'm not a voiceover artist yet. Feel free to hire me. I'll say soothing things about your product, or I'll say exciting things so it sounds like fun. But anyway, it's a little studio, like a little pod that you kind of build inside your house. And so anyway, I have my apartment is basically two rooms. I've got my bedroom, I've got my kitchen slash living room, and then, okay, if you add a third room, it's my bathroom. And there's a little sort of mini hallway, but it's not big. I think it's under 600 square feet, quite frankly. Although, having also lived in much smaller spaces, I think in Boston, I had an extended nervous breakdown inside a studio that had like a hot plate and a mini fridge. And I think that was no more than 300 square feet. So blessings and shout out to all of you who are in small spaces, alone or overcrowded with people. But anyway, so I don't have like room to, I don't have a separate studio room or something. But anyway, just letting you in on the magic of this podcast. So if it's echoey, if you hear sounds, please just know that I am very grateful to you for continuing to listen. I got to talk to just a beautiful person. I did background research and said, yo, is Australian singer-songwriter Ben Lee cool? And everybody said, yeah, he's real cool. Except some of them said it in foreign accents. But he's just a great guy. And I knew he'd be a great guy. He's a beautiful, talented singer-songwriter. He is married to the beautiful, talented actress Ione Skye. They have a kiddo. They have a step kiddo. Well, he has a step kiddo. And it was really nice to get to talk to somebody who is dealing with the ups and downs of this thing with his family, figuring out creative ways to deal with it. And he really does work in some sort of a magic-looking music wizard cave. Like, at once it looks extremely normal and down to earth. It's not like 1,000 feet tall, and it doesn't look like a mansion or something, like a music mansion. Although, shout out to people with music mansions. That's great. I know a couple, actually, now that I think about it. Or I know one person who converted their barn on their farm, an old one. They converted it and soundproofed it, and then they just built another barn. And they're not rich people, like they live on a working farm. They just were like, yeah, I know how to build a studio and I'll do it. Anyway, the point is this. Ben Lee's studio looks like the coolest office, and it just has some very good energy in it. And I was very glad to see that. We get into a lot of stuff, and when we talk about a lot of wonderful musicians. And this was recorded after we lost Adam Schlesinger, who you may know from Fountains of Wayne and from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but this was recorded before John Prine passed away. And I think we probably would have, it was like a few days in between, that we got. And it seems like those losses are coming faster and more frequently. These are not people I knew personally. I think that Ben did, but these are not people that I knew personally. But if you're sad because an artist has passed away, that's very natural. That's very normal. And it sucks that we can't get together to talk about it and deal with it. But hopefully you're able to get in touch with people you care about, or just fans, fellow acolytes of these prophets of good jams. And you, I hope you're able to get together with them online and kind of experience what it is they gave to the world. And if you're not familiar with their work, then this is a great opportunity to find out more about them. I mean, God, Bill Withers alone, I still feel pretty knocked out from that. So yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm fine, obviously. I'm just a fan. I'm a nobody, right? But so it's not about me personally. It's about the experience of somebody, an artist you love, like somebody losing an artist you love. That's something else. Thankfully, Ben and Ione and the kiddos seem to be doing very well. Wonderful artists. I would say probably all of them are artists. I don't know them personally, but I'm guessing they all have artistic souls in some way. And I really hope you enjoy this interview and also encourage you to look at Ben Lee's Instagram Live, because it seems that every other day he and his daughter are doing a little talent show with other people on the internet. So get ready. You're going to hear a light, not like full bogan. I can't do an Australian accent. You're going to hear a light Australian accent and hopefully a good conversation that you enjoy. Everybody, welcome to, I mean, a very important, well, this isn't normal interview on, I am an investigative journalist about how to chill the fuck out. So I'm really excited to have musician Ben Lee here with me. Hi, Ben.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's so wonderful to have you here. And behind you, I can see, although of course the listening audience won't see, you have such a beautiful array of like artwork, and I'm guessing, have we got, oh my gosh.
This look, this is my creative space. It's like, ooh, you know, it's pretty.
It's gorgeous. Pretty, it's beautiful. We've got musical instruments. We've got a colorful array of images, which I'm assuming are like concert posters.
Oh, and there's all kinds of stuff. There's like, yeah, some of my stuff from my career, but there's also like, you know, a film frame from Willy Wonka, chocolate.
Oh, you know, cool.
Little bits and pieces of things, a voodoo mask from New Orleans, and
badass.
Little bits of art. I mean, I kind of look at it as, I have like a signed Lee Perry, some musical notation, things that like, I sort of look at it as artistry is a bit like conjuring. And sometimes when I think about bringing things into my space, into my little studio here and putting them up on the wall, it's almost like adding an element to a spell, you know? Mm. So I have representations of certain artists or aesthetics or just vibes that I want to be reminded of, to be tapped into. It's not like really thinking of it as like a, you know, a magical thing, but just in the sense of like, they're like triggers for direction. They're places I want to be reminded of as I step forward.
I have on my desk, this is from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. This is a Van Gogh,
that's cool.
like Christmas ornament. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, I love Van Gogh, Van Gogh. Growing up in Australia, do you guys say Van Gogh instead of Van Gogh?
I think so. I didn't. It's not a word I used a whole lot as a child and a teenager, but I think so.
Aussie baby child.
Let me tell you, the many debates on Bondi Beach over Van Gogh's work. They were plentiful. They were plentiful.
Yeah. The whole Gold Coast is entirely run by, it's run, the economy is all based on the debate over Van Gogh versus Van
exactly.
Gogh.
Exactly. Vibrant part of the culture.
Yeah. Well, I've also got, that's there because my favorite episode of television, ever, which is a bold thing to say, is about Van Gogh. It is Doctor Who from the reboot, series 5, episode 10.
I saw Doctor Who as a kid, the really kind of scary, badly made stuff in the early 80s that was like, I never watched a full episode, but it always terrified me. I think I was sort of always had a push and a pull with kind of DIY culture. Like, and that show looked so homemade. It was like made out of cardboard that like it scared me because like as a kid, as a creative person, you're sort of thinking about where is artistry going to take you? And it just looked like a dark turn in someone's life that would lead them to producing a show like Doctor Who, you know?
AKA England. It's a dark turn, which is in a perpetual dark turn in its own life. When I've traveled internationally, which I love to do, and obviously I'm not doing right now, and I know you've done a ton of as an artist, but I've always found that if I was in a hostel, or as time went on, I was in hotels. How fancy?
Okay, don't brag.
Yeah, I'm trying to listen. Guess who doesn't deal with tallest poppy syndrome? This American. I've stayed in hotels with their own bathrooms, but I always found that hanging out with Australians was the most fun, and not even because people will go, "Oh yeah," because they like to party, and I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Like, but that's not even it for me. It was the sense of humor and like the devotion to banter and the ability to occasionally have an emotion and display it loudly is something that appeals to me very greatly. Yeah. I'm not necessarily great with people who are very, although I respect it, I have to really readjust for people who are culturally very reserved and who won't like take the piss out of each other. But people who can, as we would say in New Jersey, people who are into breaking balls, like I can deal with that. I feel like I've met a lot of Australians in my day who have a wonderfully, like, somehow simultaneously can be self-deprecating and also make fun of you at the same time. That's really great.
There's a bit of a teasing culture. Like, my wife sometimes like is like, why are you, like, I have friends that like, American friends who I am the only person they will really allow to tease them because it's done in such a like loving way. Like Australian culture is, you know, it's quite wonderful. I mean, there's some, not as much anymore. When I was growing up, there were some limitations as far as like being a creative person and wanting to experience things. Within Australia used to be a little bit more isolated culturally than obviously in the internet age, it's like everything's wherever you are, everyone's getting the same culture. But Australians are very like spontaneous and fun. I think that's a big part of it. It's funny. I was watching that, Dave Chappelle, Mark Twain, prize on Netflix. It just, you know,
I haven't seen it yet. I heard it's wonderful.
It's really good, but it's funny because a lot of the qualities people talked about how spontaneous he was. I was like, he just sounds like an Australian. Like, there is a Australians generally kind of like open to adventure in a way, and that's a sort of a lot of what bonds, especially the Australians that end up over here. In LA, you know, there's a lot of actors and musicians and, you know, directors and things like that. But they're really like, we're sort of culturally people who once we aren't afraid of kind of, you know, taking a big swing, whether it's with like, I guess putting ourselves out there in a certain way that's like, yes, there is that tall poppy thing. But there is something about the humility of being in a culture that tears each other down. It like allows you to take a bigger swing because you can handle the repercussions a bit better.
Well, you've been trained for it. You've been trained for it to like the ability to laugh at oneself, I think, is whether or not you're the type of person who likes to break balls or take the piss out of somebody else. The ability to laugh at oneself is something that is such wonderful self-preservation. Not when it's done to the point of, see, it's different from being down on oneself or hurting oneself or self-loathing. That's not it. It's this wonderful quality of bringing oneself back down to earth, which models it for other people as well. And I think that's really special.
Well, and once you become a Jewish Australian, you're sort of getting it from both sides. like the ability to laugh your way through suffering is really just like quite extraordinary. You know?
It's an incredible, it is a survival mechanism and it absolutely leads to longevity, to survival, to evolution. Like right now I've been thinking so often, because I've dealt with panic at my first, I'm an author, and my first book years ago was called Agora Fabulous, Dispatches from My Bedroom. So I am not unfamiliar with inexplicable terror emerging from the depths of one's brain for seemingly no reason. And right now it's been an interesting time, I would say, for those of us who, for different reasons, cultural, psychological, emotional, biochemical, whatever, who've dealt with anxiety, to put those strategies to use, our management strategies to use. And I think that what I have noticed is that, broadly speaking, people who come from either a household in which there was emotional chaos of some kind, or were raised to feel the weight of anxiety because of history or because of outside forces, are broadly, very broadly speaking, very generally speaking, kind of equipped for this. Kind of equipped for, not that it's smooth sailing or that it's easy, but I think it's not a shock that something bad would happen.
Right. Well, I think for sure, when you were saying that, I was just thinking about basically everyone in show business. Mm-hmm. And how we, like, for us, the idea of not knowing where your next paycheck's coming from, or that there might be a 6-month lag in payment, is also not an unheard of scenario. So I'm seeing in music, and obviously I think entertainers and artists have that double thing of, like, probably coming from families where there was, like, a little bit of instability. And but also having careers where we've adapted to that. And I'm seeing actually a remarkable amount of adaptation and pivoting and being creative. And I don't think anyone knows the answer, but all the creative people I know are kind of just trying things. And I think that is... That survival skill is kind of amazing, to not be paralyzed in the face of adversity or chaos, but to see it as sort of like a somewhat natural part of existence.
I'm always so admiring of, I come from a stand-up comedy background, and now I'm a writer mostly. Once in a while I perform still, but mostly I'm a writer. But I'm always amazed by the resilience of actors, which I know your wife is, and musicians, which obviously you are, because I always say that those two, when it comes to the arts at least, those two fields are so tough because musicians don't have a union. If we're talking about, you know, people playing gigs as opposed to someone composing or what have you for film and television, but so because sometimes you're literally going in and a club might not pay a musician, you know, there's no guarantee you don't have weight behind you. I mean, obviously someone at your level has much more of a following, much more of particularly someone who's been recording since you were a young teen has much more experience, much more of an established career. But, you know, I think about friends who are in, like, bar bands, and they're just playing and playing and playing. And sometimes or kids who are out on the road in a van with their friends in a punk band, getting stiffed out of money happens. And not knowing where your next gig is coming from happens all the time. And then in terms of thinking about actors, I think about all the rejection that they have to go through. Auditioning, being up for something, hearing time and time again, it's between you and this one other person, and then you don't get it. It seems to me that throughout, from the most base level on to the most, like, you're killing it, musicians and actors still have to deal with some rejection sometimes, some instability and some difficulty. And I wonder if, because you've been recording since you were a kid, if that has in some ways prepared you for this or for things like this.
It's hard to know exactly, and I can't honestly say that I feel more prepared than anyone else. But I feel the amount of times as my own. You know, I've never really had a boss. I mean, once I composed music for a TV show. A couple times I've done something for a commercial. But basically, I've been the self-driving sort of motor and motivator between my own process and my own career every time. The amount of times I've had to rethink or allow my ideas to be refined by external forces, even things like the internet. You know, like I remember, like when I started playing music, it was, I used to like Motley Crue a lot when I was a kid. And I loved that.
Yeah.
You know, did you ever see that home video Uncensored? It was like, you know, so it was like their home video that you could buy.
I wasn't
bucks.
Allowed
I was
like, to buy it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So and it was like Vince Neil in the back. There was a jacuzzi in the trunk of a limo. And he was driving down Sunset Strip with like a girl under each arm. And they were like flashing their boobs to people. Like, and that is, I suppose if there's one archetypal image of why I entered rock and roll, that would be it. Like, that's sort of what I sort of expected a career to be like.
And that's what it's been like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
exactly. The whole way through.
And what's interesting is like, you could argue that in my industry, the entire model in which a rock star or a musician is placed on a pedestal in that way no longer exists, because now the model of success is actually about hyper engagement with your audience and about not placing yourself up in a place that is unreachable. Like if I used to think about like writing a fan letter to Motley Crue, I wouldn't imagine they'd even have gotten it. But now if I loved a band and I was 16 or 15, I would tweet them or something or write an Instagram message, and there's a chance they would to some degree engage with that, right? So I guess what I'm saying is like the entire model that, you know, I've been making music professionally for, what is it now, like 28 years. The amount of times I've had to rethink my place in the ecosystem it's really been countless. Like the style of music I play has gone in and out of fashion so many times that like, and it's oddly, there's a very strange thing happening now where, you know, my music has often been too earnest or too like open-hearted, or like it sort of hasn't been almost like culturally appropriate for different moments. But at this very moment right now, people seem to be enjoying my music because that's precisely the type of art they want to engage with. They don't want cynicism. They don't want irony. They want someone connecting from the heart with a little bit of humor and a bit of perspective and being like, hey, this is where I am. You're there too? Let's do this, right? So all of it has been about for me surfing these kind of waves of culture and of things going on in the world and saying like, well, okay, I guess I'm going against the tide now. Well, okay, I'm going with it. Let's go a little faster. Well, we're against the tide. And all of that is like very natural. It's just part of what we do.
I remember the first time I heard about you was from Sassy Magazine in like 1993.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we're the same. Cute band alert. I'm born in 1980. Are you like 78 or 79?
I'm 78, yeah, 78.
Okay, so you were like a million years older. And mm-hmm. I was like 13 or something and was like, what? This 15-year-old? You made, I don't know if it was an LP or if it was an album, but I do remember that they were like, this kid's really good and he's hilarious. Like he's like writing about how like Evan Dando is hotter than him and he finds it annoying. I'm trying to remember the exact, I can't remember. Imagine, I can't call up the exact words.
That exact issue of Sassy Magazine, is that imprinted in your brain?
What's wrong with me? I can't recall your cute band alert word for word, but I do recall it. And I remember that was very on point for the era because it was self-deprecating and funny, but also soulful and sensitive and thoughtful. And so it's really fascinating and what an extraordinary thing to have been making music and getting attention for making music at such a young age. And now we're both still very young to still be doing it and doing it. And I mean, I saw you and Josh Radner and Lee play, I guess, I want to say, like, last year or the year,
whereabouts?
Maybe 2 years ago.
Where,
okay, we were in L.A., and was it, what club was it at?
Oh, was it, like, Hotel Cafe or something like that?
No, shit, why am I blanking on this? It was a great crowd. It's a legendary club. I'm so young that
Troubadour,
I forgot.
Troubadour.
Yeah, at
the
Troubadour. Yeah, I ate a lot of fried things and had a great time. And that was so much fun. And delightful too. And so you've been a solo artist, you've worked with bands, you've collaborated with people. Like, do you ever stop and go, holy fuck, this is pretty cool?
I mean, I think that basic gratitude is something that hopefully as we get older, it just becomes more ingrained in our life. Like me and Ione, my wife, were talking yesterday about our house and about how you can go through phases where you're just like, oh, I wish I could change this. I wish I could fix that. I wish we could redo. And then you're like stuck in it. And you're like, wow, what a great house. We love our house. Like the moments like this, there's, I don't know, I'm personally going through, like I said, a refinement. I think I'm sort of interested in, there's a lot of artists like, you know, Dostoevsky used to, the story was he used to like go and write in the village square.
Really?
Because he liked, there was something about the chaos of it that allowed him to tap into a sense of perspective about what he wanted to create. And there's an interesting philosopher called Gurdjieff who he used to deliberately up and move to countries where there were political uprisings happening because he felt that when you were in the midst of social change, perspectives became very clear. It was like your priorities got really, it was, you could see what was important, you know, your values. And I'm going through a lot of that. I think a lot of us are asking what type of people do we want to be on the other side of this? What type of work do we want to make? What type of ways do we want to foster community? Obviously, what type of leadership do we want? But a lot of these questions, you avoid them in day-to-day life when things are status quo.
Yeah, they get drowned out by the noise of the everyday.
But in upheaval, it's like they become apparent in something that is that I didn't even realize. It's funny, I get like a little emotional talking about it because it's sort of like it's really on my mind at the moment.
We let crying gets to happen on this program.
I don't know if I'm going to cry.
let me set you up for open weeping or rage or ridiculous laughter. But go right ahead.
That might be overstating it. But I realize how I've carried the criticisms I've received over the course of my career. Had left somewhat of a callus of shame or doubt about my value as an artist. That you know you're making work, and there's this question of like, is it a value? Is it a value? Am I making anything of value, or am I a pretender, or am I someone who got lucky multiple times, or am I part of offering anything of value to my community? And it wasn't until we entered this period. And I started seeing the space for my music and what I offer at a time like this. Because I think we're all, you know, you're doing this podcast. It's like we're all saying, how can I contribute, right? How can I stay sane and contribute? And I think as we start seeing at a time like this of upheaval, there are ways we are of value that we hadn't been appreciating yet. And I don't like to make too much of a prediction, but I'm venturing to guess that I may have made it to the other side of a certain degree of self-doubt during this period. I hope that the reality is, as artists, we don't all make work for people to engage with every day. That's not how it is. Like if you're a writer, you write a book that people might read at a very specific time of their life when they need it. There might be, you know, you might be like Death Cab for Cutie or My Chemical Romance, who people go through a thing when they're 16, 17, or Bright Eyes, and they fall in love with this music, and it's like, it changes their teenage life, you know what I mean? Like, that's okay. It's okay to make music that, or make art that is applicable when people need it. And I think what I'm coming through this experience with is, there is a time where people turn to what I do and it is a value. And I hope that that lesson stays with me, because I think those little doubts that we carry, they undermine the confidence with which we can deliver our work on a daily level in regular times in our life. And I'm starting to feel that nagging little demon of doubt that was there throughout my career, it's starting to fade. And I'm starting to say, you know what? Maybe it's at really hard times where people turn to my music. Maybe it's at times where there's no room left for irony or sarcasm. And that's when people turn to my music. And that's okay. You know, and it's like a new it's a new feeling I'm having about what I can offer to my community, basically.
I feel a fundamental shift happening within me, and I don't know exactly what it is yet, but it is a feeling somewhat akin to what you are describing. It feels like I'm realizing maybe what the purpose of what I do really is, and that it's okay to go in that direction, because we both make work, you to a greater extent, but we both make work that lots of people get to consume in some way, or more people beyond the folks in our house or our friends who we can, you know, email, right? So that's a blessing. That's a special thing. That's having a so-called platform that somebody, I mean, it's not even talking about fame or degrees of that, but talking about when you have the privilege, opportunity, the joy, sometimes the pain of creating something that will be absorbed, will be loved, will be judged, will be criticized by people you'll never meet, which is something you've experienced since you were a child, legally a child anyway, that is very special. And sometimes, as my grandparents used to say, there will always be somebody around you who you decide is better looking, somebody who, objectively speaking, has more money in the bank, somebody who's won more awards in your industry, somebody who's stronger physically than you. So you need to like yourself or else you're not going to be happy. And that simple wisdom is something that is becoming very true to me right now. And it sounds like in its way to you as well, because the truth is you would not be finding people loving your work, particularly right now, if they didn't also like it during the status quo times. But because it's so special and specific, it's resonating even more with people now who might just be a casual fan or go, oh yeah, Ben Lee, he's pretty cool. That stuff's fun. Yeah, stuff's cool. I like it. Where it's really hitting them now because their armor is down a bit. And so they might be moved to share it with people who might otherwise never have heard of your music or might sort of vaguely have heard of you and thought, oh yeah, that guy's from New Zealand, right? Where's he from? Is he from Tunisia? Yeah. The Tunisian singer song. Got it. And that's very special. And I feel if we can, for as long as we get to be here on this planet, if we get to leave, whether we have future lives or not, I don't know, or there's a heaven or a hell, I don't know. But if we get to, once we peace out, if we get to have provided people some joy and comfort, that's pretty cool, right?
Absolutely. And I think, like, you know, my experience, like, you know, after last week when Adam Schlesinger died, you know, he's a songwriter that a lot of us knew. I was very moved to, like, when I was talking to friends or texting with a friend, just be like, hey, also, I love you. Like, just taking the opportunity to let people know while you're both here that you love them and you appreciate them. I think a lot of us are going through that experience. And I think as artists, we are on the receiving end of some of that beauty where there are people that have enjoyed our work, but they haven't felt compelled to let us know.
Yes.
Until this moment when you suddenly realize, hey, the people I love and appreciate might not be around tomorrow. Let me tell them now. That's one of those things about, you know, when people die, like this great songwriter David Berman died this year. There was a lot of, you suddenly saw how many people were influenced by his work. And it was like, oh my God, if all of these people had posted on social media at any given point of this person's life while they were around, this would have changed the trajectory of this person's career. And you realize like how important it is to appreciate each other and to speak up and be vocal about what we love. I mean, we live in this culture where everyone is so vocal about what they hate. Mm-hmm. Myself included, like I can complain about things and I can tell you why I don't like someone's aesthetic approach to what they make, often much easier than I can tell you about what I love about someone's approach. It's just for some reason we live in a culture that has conditioned us to be able to be critical more easily than it is to be enthusiastic and supportive. And
love is more vulnerable, because if I tell you I love you, that tells you can hurt me. And that it tells you a lot of other things, more wonderful things. But if I say, oh, I love something, that shows a softness. So even if I'm not telling you directly, I love you, and you're like, well, fuck you, I'm taking all your money, which would be really specific.
Yeah.
But even if I'm saying, wow, you know what? I really love the movie Anchorman, which I fucking do. I really love that movie. Somebody can say to me, well, you're stupid, and that movie's dumb, and here's why. Whereas it's much more, if anger is under hate, perhaps, and maybe hurt is underneath that, but let's deal with the anger. Anger is an active emotion. It's powerful. I hate that. It sucks. It's an attack. It's on the offensive. That's when I've got my armor on, right? So, I mean, the way that you're putting this is so beautiful. It's really making me think, Ben, thank you. And it is easier. And it's also fun to be funny about shit that we hate. I do it all the time. But to talk about things that you love, that's more, special.
There's also like more words for what we dislike. Like there's something about love. I mean, every poet and every songwriter and every filmmaker has realized this, that beauty reaches a point of transcendence beyond language. I mean, that's that amazing Keats line, beauty is truth, truth beauty. That is all you know and all you need to know. There's nothing to say beyond I love you. It's often very hard to be verbose and to be witty and to be eloquent about love. But within that, it's funny, you know, a few days ago was I'm having a lot of very moving experiences. Like a couple of days ago, I saw people posting online about, hey, it's REM's. It's the 40th anniversary of REM forming in 1980. And me and my daughter and my stepdaughter and my wife, we were all sitting by the fire, and Ione just put on Night Swimming, this REM song that we love. And we were all just like, oh my God. And so I tweeted something about Night Swimming, about how this song, it's always been a song that like the mystery of existence is like encapsulated in this song to me. I don't even understand how it works or why it works.
It's magic.
And the feedback I was getting on Twitter from this, everyone was like, oh my God, that song, no one talks about it. And we were sharing this. And then yesterday I was like, I'm going to learn the song. And I covered it and I put it up on Instagram and Facebook. And I also saw people just like, thank you, this song. And it's like we're all open to gratitude at the moment in a way that is blowing my mind. It's blowing my mind. We've started, my daughter and I, it's funny, my daughter's 10 and she's a little hot and cold on having to have any commitments during this period. But we started doing them. Me and her started as a lark doing, because she would always do talent shows with her friends. Like she'd be like, okay, everyone do a talent. This one does cartwheels. That one does. I was like, let's do one on Instagram and just see what happens. So we started doing this quarantine talent show. And it's like, we've been doing it every second day at 3 p.m. On Instagram Live. And we basically just, you know, there's no screening. So you basically just, we approve anyone who requests to be added to it. And there's people, it goes from people who have like, just written their first song and want to share it, and it's 11 minutes long, and it's some sort of like imitation of Hallelujah that we probably could have been spared, to someone who can bend their finger back all the way to touch, to someone who, like, yesterday a girl called in who was making macarons up in Alberta and doing piping on them, to my mother-in-law who was reading puns. And I was like, so wait, the actual talent here is not, you didn't write the puns, you're reading the puns. You have a skill.
It's elocution related to puns.
Exactly. But it was interesting because this Christian Lee
Hudson. Yeah.
So he played a song yesterday on our talent show, and I thanked him after. I was like, thank you so much. That was so amazing. And also to have like professionals come in and do the beautiful thing, you know. And he said, thanks for creating a safe space for sharing at the moment. And I realized that like our hearts are open at the moment and we are craving connection and tenderness. And we want to bring, it's not like we want to lose our intelligence and our discernment and our ability to articulate complex ideas, but we're ready to stand with, like, this conversation we're having, I feel like naturally leapt into the deep end of emotional reality much faster than it would have a month ago.
Oh, because, yeah, absolutely.
Because we decided to connect, and there was an understanding that, like, we're standing in a place of more openness and vulnerability. And it's just, my goal at the moment is just kind of to almost, like, use this time to catapult myself into the rest of my life. Like, whatever's happening now, we're living in, you know, we are all Gurdjieffs. We've all moved into a country in political upheaval. We're all writing our novel in the village square, whether that's a literal piece of art or we're just creating our life. We're all creating our life. And it's like, my intention at the moment is to solidify a foundation of who I am, because there's something I'm touching on in this period that is fundamentally true about who I am. And I heard you saying something very similar. It's like the foundation of who you are is there's something becoming clear about it. I want to like formalize that foundation in this period and get to know it intimately and stand on it for the rest of my life. I don't want to forget, you know what I mean? It's like a psychedelic experience. It's like you're in it and you touch something and you say, please don't let me forget this. Don't let me forget we're all connected. And whatever happens, weird things are going to happen in the rest of our lives. But I want to stay standing on this foundation because I believe it to be true.
It feels fundamentally different. It feels like a sea change, and I don't think that it's a false one. I found after, in the wake of 9/11, which I will say is comparable in certain ways and certainly not in others. In the wake of that time, which in this country felt unprecedented, and was certainly unprecedented in my lifetime in that way, there was a change there that has informed the rest of my life. I was 20, I guess. And I really hope, and what you said was so beautiful, thank you so much for being so thoughtful and fun and wonderful to talk to you. I really hope that I and that other folks who wish for it to be so are able to experience a fundamental change in this time that is very positive. Or maybe we become more of who we really are. And maybe we find out that who we really are isn't so bad and might have something really wonderful to offer, and that it's okay and not saccharine and shitty to be sincere sometimes. I like being sarcastic too, but it's okay to be authentic and sincere, and it's wonderful. It's very special. And, you know, Ben, I always do a little bit of background research in terms of asking, you know, friends of friends about somebody. And so I asked just a couple people, or I said, like, hey, I'm going to interview Ben Lee. And the universal sample size of three people said, oh, you're going to have he's such a great guy. And I'm not going to tell you who it was, but because I have to keep my sample size.
Protect anonymity. Yeah, yeah.
To keep my demographic, you know, secret. But they were all like, he's such a great dude. You're going to have a great time interviewing him. And that has proven quite accurate. So thank you.
Well, I'm so glad we did this.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that there are, amidst all the chaos, we're finding ways of connecting. And I think we solidify what we're learning by articulating it. And I think if you create spaces to share what we're learning, it becomes true. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it's like lost in the madness of our own minds. We don't know if it's real or not.
Well, I have three more questions to you in brief. I've taken a lot of time of yours, more than I said I would, and I appreciate you very much for that. Thank you.
I got time.
All right. So question number one. So you and your lovely wife, Ione, are both very talented artists, and you are parents who are artists. And I know that we are reaching, as I'm interviewing you on April 7th, and so this will go up sometime in April. And so I know that it's April 7th, and I'm hearing complaints from friends who are parents who are not educators, and some of whom are artists, some of whom are not, but majority of whom are not, who are like, I don't know what to do with my kid now. And I'm not saying that you and Ione are specially equipped. I mean, you're dealing with all of this as well. But because you are creative people and you're artists, I'm wondering if there's one thing, and you've actually described at least two, that you found to be helpful with homeschooling a 10-year-old right now.
Mm. That's an interesting one. I think I mean, it's not the kind of thing you really want to go on record with a, you know, blanket statement about.
Sure. But
I'm encouraging my daughter to do more of the things that actually interest her.
That's a great thing to go on record about.
Well, I'm just saying, when you get to like school syllabus and getting through the work and standardized testing, there's these all a lot of issues right. about how to. But personally, I feel that kids do not need the extra stress right now of feeling that they need to be meeting expectations of, I don't know, just like sort of conforming to getting the work done, going through, I think it's a stressful time, you know, and I'm just encouraging my daughter to lean into the things that she's excited about. She's, you know, she plays the harp. And
beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We moved it into the middle of the living room because I noticed that she wants to be around us. Like our house is, you know, it's like a contemporary modern sort of like, it's like a flat one level, mm-hmm. but like kind of spread out. And we want to be around each other more, everybody. Like it's funny, the urge to, we're quarantined together and we want to all be in closer quarters. It's probably like there's a biological imperative, like a survival thing.
Yeah.
And we realized, like, by putting the harp in the other room, in her bedroom, it was forcing her to go off and practice there, and it all felt very serious. And now we've got in the living room, and she walks past it a dozen times a day and sits and plays a little bit. And it's much less following the rigor of a traditional education of, like, now it's time to practice your instrument. And it's more like, hey, let's put it where it's fun and where you want to play it. And I think that, to me, embodies the approach we're kind of taking with, like, creating a space physically and emotionally for all of us in the house where we want to do more of what inspires us, because that's what's kind of getting us through.
Beautiful. Question two of the final three questions. So, the Australian accent, a complex thing for the American to get into. My friend, Alicia Hanna, Australian, has a friend who said that the best way to get into it is to say Jennifer Lopez's name several times, where you start with Jennifer Lopez, and then you get to Jennifer Lopez, and then you get to Jennifer Lopez.
Lopez, yeah, Lopez.
Can you suggest a way into the Australian accent? And there are many Australian accents, but for our American listeners who are dying to know, there's probably three of them who are really like, oh, fuck, I have to do a self-tape audition, or I have to play Aussie. What do I do? Is there a word where you find that it, because yours is, in speaking to me, it's relatively light, and I'm sure
I've lived in the right. U.S. for so long.
Yeah. When I go home to Jersey, how are you doing? Like here, I'm like, how are you doing? So are there specific words where it comes out more for you just naturally? That's my real question is, do you find people going, hey, what? Excuse me?
I've got to think about that. The weird thing about accents is the obvious points to hit are always like everyone gets them. It's like when people do Boston and they're like, park the car in Harvard Yard.
It's like, always the vowels.
And it's the same sentences and everyone learns it the same way. The subtleties there's something that I've not put a lot of thought into, but people who pick up on them, like, you know who actually has done the American who single-handedly did the best Australian accent I ever heard was Adam Levine from Maroon 5.
Really?
Like, I was chatting to him at a party one night. He did this Australian accent, and it was so right on. Like, because it's subtle things that I don't know. I mean, one of a good one you can practice saying is like, I've got to go down to the servo, the Savo, which is...
The what? Yeah.
So we call gas stations service stations.
Okay. Okay. So, like not petrol station, gas station, service station.
Yeah, you say service. I gotta get down to the servo. And then you shorten everything in Australia. So the servo.
Yeah, I have an Australian friend who said defo, and I was like,
yeah, defo.
What is defo? So, definitely.
Yeah, I gotta stop at the servo, the Savo.
And okay.
This Arvo is afternoon, right?
What?
So okay. Yeah. So the Savo. So the Savo is Arvo.
Avo.
Which is different to Avo, which is avocado. So like Avo, you'd have an Avo toast, but you could have an Avo in the Avo. But You don't get fresh produce, so you would very rarely get an Avo from the servo in the Avo.
Third and most important. Oh, wait, four questions. Okay, third question, where can people find you on the internet?
I think Benly Music everywhere. All socials.
Fourth question. And
people should tune into this very soon. As long as, who knows, it might only last one more.
Oh, yeah,
but
on Instagram.
Quarantine Talent Show, Instagram Live, 3 p.m. PST, every second day, which doesn't mean a whole lot. They can check in and have a look when we're doing it. It's pretty good, silly fun.
It sounds like so much fun. Fourth and most important question.
Yeah.
Do you have a take that you'd like to share on fairy bread, which is not a thing I ever had until this calendar year when my friend told me about it. And I was like, what? And I ate it. I ordered it from a place. I live in Northeast LA, and I ordered it from a place in Atwater Village called
you
Rue Coffee.
You ordered it?
I ordered it.
Okay,
at Rue Coffee.
So people who don't know, fairy bread is white bread, like sort of Wonder Bread, with butter and then what you call sprinkles, we call hundreds and thousands. So bright colored sprinkles, hundreds and thousands. And it's basically sugar bread, but it is, I'll tell you what, if you have kids and their school does most schools do this kind of hey, we have one day where bring a food, we're going to do a potluck, bring a food native from your country. if you bring fairy bread, you will be the most popular family. And it is just delicious and terrible. It's fantastic.
I mean, I got it, and it's very, it's very L.A., so it's very, it's on organic, locally made grandma's bread our local pasture-raised butter and...
You get the sprinkles that are, they're, pastel. They're not good, bright colors. They're, because they're all natural.
You need the demonic, poison, red food coloring.
You got to go to the grocery store and just get, bright, super toxic hundreds of thousands of sprinkles.
It's my ideal. I think Australia has my ideal carbohydrate, which is fairy bread. I just, because I would, if you told me, Sarah, you can have either for the rest of your life, all the bread you want or all the ice cream you want. I'm picking bread every time. And fairy bread is a bread sundae. It's the best.
No, there's nothing else quite like it. It's quite bizarre.
Well, thank you so much for this, Benly.
Thanks,
Sarah. You have been awesome.
Awesome. This was fun.
And that was my interview with the absolutely lovely Ben Lee. You know, when you do an interview and after you walk away from it or push your chair back from it, you feel like, hey, I bet I'd have a nice time bringing pie over to that person's family's potluck. That's a good feeling. That's a good interview, you know? Not that that's actually ever going to happen, but people who have done a lot of press often are very trained with a lot of talking points, and they're very eloquent and they're very articulate and they're very on point, and that's awesome. And you can sit with them for 2 hours and they can just go and go and go and not break character, so to speak, the character being an elevated version of themselves. And as an author, I have a limited experience with that because I've done lots of press. I remember one time I did a press tour. My friend let me use her shop, Los Angeles County Store, an amazing place. Check out LA County Store on Instagram. They're wonderful. So I was in her shop and I did, I think I did 30 radio interviews in the space of 6 hours. Starting at 4 a.m. Pacific, because we're hitting morning and midday radio. And anyway, I've done radio. I was a host and producer on Sirius XM for a couple of years, so I've interviewed plenty of people. My point is that it's understandable that people have to go to talking points and that they have to sound kind of stiff and rehearsed. When you hear politicians out on the stump, you'll hear them tell the same stories over and over. They have to. You're talking that much. You can't create something brand new every time. And I always appreciate their time, as long as they're not abusive, if I'm doing an interview, or vice versa, as long as the press person isn't shitty, which is very rare in my experience. But I really appreciate when you get somebody and you just feel like you're having a nice talk with somebody real. And you think, you know what? I bet a picnic in their backyard has plenty of napkins. And I bet they don't get mad if you spill the Kool-Aid on a tablecloth. Or if they do, they don't let you know they're mad. You know what I'm saying? Just like a nice neighbor. When you feel like you've spoken to a nice neighbor. anyway, again, check out Ben Lee online and on Instagram. I believe he's Ben Lee Music in all of those places. And be sure to check out that talent show there. Well, I'm late for my therapy appointment already. So I'm going to hop off, but I just want to say, matryoshka.com, use offer code SARA for 20% off plus free shipping on everything but masks. VanessaMinnell.com, use offer code CALM, C-A-L-M, for 10% off. And MelissaSinova.com, use offer code POLLY, P-O-L-L-Y, for 20% off readings. And support us, patreon.com/SarahBenincasa. By us, I mean me. I just got to be real about that. All right, I got to go. I can't fit in a relaxation exercise today. We're doing this kind of on the fly, last minute. I'm going to go talk to my shrink, which I'm excited about. If you've got one, try and talk to them. And if you're looking for somebody, go to NAMI.org, NAMI.org, National Alliance on Mental Illness. Check them out. Feel free to donate to them. And look for low-cost sliding scale resources if cost is an issue. I love you. I like you. Thank you for being here with me.